This is Tape 3, Levels of Thinking, Enforcers. In this section, Len explains how we develop 5 levels of ability for thinking and relating to others, and how our thinking fluctuates or changes. He then goes on to describe the first level, enforcer thinking, which is typical of preschoolers and also of adults who are highly stressed, tired, or threatened. Several handouts apply to this presentation. Handout number 4, Summary Chart of Human Development, and handout number 5, Behavioral Stances, give you the same information in 2 different formats. These handouts outline Len's presentation on each of the tapes in this series, entitled Levels of Thinking. Handout number 6, Keywords and Phrases, and handout number 7, Styles of Negotiating, give you additional practical information about each of the levels of thinking.
Now let's talk about the developmental process that goes on in us as human beings, and we'll talk about the first level of thinking. What's true for us as human beings is that we do go through a developmental process in every part of us. We develop physically, we develop emotionally, and we develop cognitively. We develop continuously more sophisticated and complicated, complex forms of thinking. It's like we develop bigger and better computers as we get older. Preschoolers have a certain way of thinking. And by the time we hit elementary age, we're able to take in data and process it, make meaning out of it in more complex ways. And by the time we hit junior high age, our equipment is more complex yet. So we go through this developmental process where the form or structure of our thinking evolves and becomes more complex and sophisticated. So this is a developmental process that every human being goes through. It's universal. It applies to people from any culture or any country. And what's true for us as adults is that we find that we carry within us this enormous database that has stored within it all the experiences we've ever had. We begin storing data from probably about 3 months before birth. We know that that process starts certainly from the beginning. So we have billions of bits of data stored from all these different ages, from all these points in our history where we functioned out of different levels of thinking ability, where we had different beliefs. And what happens to us as adults is that that data gets triggered up in different ways. So I have data within me from when I was a preschooler, elementary age, junior high, teenage, and so forth. And depending upon what's going on during any typical day, what I find is that different parts of my database get called up. It comes up on the screen. And when that happens, I tend to become those different ages. I begin to think the way I thought then, feel the way I felt then, and to behave the way I behaved at those earlier ages. I believe that we literally become different ages all day long as we get historically triggered. Our body carries memory. It carries historical memory that causes us to flash back. And we all know that from our experience. I had the experience over the past several years of on a particular airline, and it's flight 39 out of St. Louis, that I've had emergency landings on. The third time that that happened over a three-year period, after we had taken off again on another flight, I suddenly found it difficult to breathe. I had pains going across my chest, and my breathing was constricted, and I had pain down one arm, and I sat there in that airplane seat saying, so this is what it's like to have a heart attack. I wonder if I should tell the stewardess. Or I wonder if I go to sleep, it'll just go away. And probably not a very wise decision. I decided just to go to sleep and see if the pain would go away. When I landed in Portland some hours later, the pain was still there and continued throughout the night. And finally, by the next day, I found myself in an emergency room of a hospital, and I spent 3 days in ICU and ultimately determined that I was not having a heart attack, but was having a stress attack from my experience of the airplane going up and down. What's interesting today is that happened several years ago. What's interesting today is my body hasn't forgotten that. that I fly every week and I get on lots of airplanes, but it's only when I get on this particular carrier and I don't think about it consciously when I'm getting on the plane, but at some point during the process of buckling up or as the plane's taxiing onto the runway, I suddenly notice that my breathing is tight again. I don't have the kind of stress reaction I had some years ago, but my body still remembers. We all have those kinds of memories in our bodies. It may be the sound of something, or the smell of something, or the voice tone. One of the people who work with me, he and I got into a discussion, argument, it was probably about 9 months ago now, where he had done something, and I made some verbal response to him that made him very defensive, and I was surprised at his reaction. What I was doing was asking a question that I intended to be a question. It was something like, well, do I need to explain that to you further? What he heard was the phrase, the expression that his father always used to him was, do I need to paint you a picture, stupid? And guess what? I got all the responses from him that he wanted to give to his father when he was 8 years old. I made him eight by that very question, not because I intended to, but because it connected into some historical data that he had stored in him. So the point of this is that we do go through a developmental process. We develop more sophisticated, more competent ways to think, to take in data, to process it. And as adults, we find ourselves moving in and out of different ages throughout the day as we get historically triggered or as we become tired or stressed or threatened. The more tired or stressed or threatened we become, literally the younger we become. It's like letting air out of a balloon. We constrict. And as we feel safe and rested, we grow up in the moment. Our capacity for thinking expands. We get older. That's why things oftentimes look better to us in the morning than they did the night before. We're literally older when we get up in the morning, not only because we're chronologically older, but because we've rested. Our capacity for thinking is bigger. So this is a universal process that we all go through. And what is also true is that each of us go through this developmental process in a unique way. And it has to do with what our experience is in the world. It has to do with what I call our scripts. That what I mean by script is, it's our particular set of beliefs and decisions and needs and behaviors that form who we are, that give us definition, that distinguish who we are, that make us unique. That whatever it is that you came into the world with genetically, certainly your experience once you were here has formed a lot of who you are. That from birth you began collecting data in your database and out of that forming hypotheses or beliefs about who you are in relation to others, what's possible and not possible, what's safe and not safe, what it means to love or to not be loved, what it means to work or not work. You have a whole host of beliefs that you formed about yourself and others in the world. And those beliefs are not neutral. They have emotions attached to them out of the experience in which they were formed. And some of those beliefs have pretty neutral emotions, they're not very important to us, and other beliefs are really loaded. They create great reaction within us. And out of those beliefs and emotions, you and I each made decisions. We made decisions about what we would do to achieve the things we wanted to achieve in the world, what we would do to be productive, to accomplish what we needed to accomplish. And we also made self-protective decisions. Decisions about what we needed to do to minimize pain and to take care of ourselves and to get what we needed. And out of those beliefs and emotions and decisions, you and I developed patterns of behavior. We developed behaviors about how we relate to different kinds of people. We developed patterns of behavior about how we take in information and process it. We developed patterns about how we solve problems, approach conflicts, about how we plan, how we organize things, so forth. We are pattern people. We are historical people. And depending upon our own unique set of beliefs and emotions and decisions and behaviors, you and I are at a certain point in our own developmental process. That certain events, certain stimuli, certain comments from outside of us trigger us into being different ages. It's a kind of a paradoxical thing, but on one hand, our beliefs and behaviors and so forth reflect different levels of thinking and acting. And at the same time, they create limits to our development. It's like a cause and effect that goes both ways. What I mean by that is that when I'm in enforcer thinking, I have certain beliefs that are typical of that level of thinking, and I'm only capable of doing certain kinds of behaviors. Think about what a preschooler, what an infant does to get what he or she needs. They can cry, they can demand it, or they go to sleep, they go away. Sometimes as adults, we still assume those are our only two options. So when I'm in certain levels of thinking, I'm only capable of certain kinds of behaviors and beliefs. At the same time, my beliefs keep me in certain levels of thinking and behavior. So if I'm in the belief that I need to please other people, that it's important what other people think of me, that what other people think of me determines my worth and value, that's a belief that's common to junior high age kids. It's a belief that's common to us around the ages 12, 13, 14, 15. If at 40, I still carry that belief that it's more important to have other people like me than to do what I really need to be doing for myself, that belief keeps me in a certain level of development. It keeps me thinking in certain forms of thinking and behaving in certain ways. So our beliefs and behaviors are both reflective of our levels of thinking, and they create our levels of thinking. One of the questions that come up often for me is the question of how to deal with different kinds of difficult people. It's been helpful to me to recognize that what we mean by difficult people are really people who are on different levels of thinking. That the younger a person is mentally, the more difficult they are to deal with. And so as we go through these levels of thinking, you will recognize yourself in all of them. If you don't, you're avoiding something in yourself. And you'll also recognize these levels of thinking in others. And what you'll recognize is, as we talk about these earlier levels of thinking, what you'll recognize are the people that you find most difficult to deal with. Difficult people, again, are not good, bad. They're just people who have gotten scared and have become constricted, and they're functioning out of younger parts of themselves. So let's talk about the first level of thinking, enforcer thinking. It's a thinking that's characteristic of preschool-age children, and it's also characteristic of adults who feel stressed, tired, or threatened enough. The thinking ability that reflects this age or this level is what's called pre-rational thinking. It's episodic thinking. It's thinking that is limited because we do not have any historical perspective. If you've ever had children, if you think about a young child, a preschooler, they don't have historical perspective. They haven't had enough experience to understand the relationship between events. They don't understand cause and effect relationships. Hence, a young child may do the same thing over and over again that doesn't work, that creates a bad result, because the child does not understand that this particular action produces this kind of result. We also find ourselves in that situation sometimes as adults, where we seem to do the same silly, stupid things over and over again, but it doesn't work. And it's usually because we're acting out of some early behavior, some behavior that we learned early on in our lives. So the behavior in this stage is what's called pre-rational. Have you ever been in discussions with another person where they don't seem to be able to see the whole picture, they're locked on one aspect of it, or they don't seem to understand how what they're doing is going to produce some effect in the future, or how the result they have now was caused by something they did in the past? Have you ever had a conversation or an argument with somebody where you ask them what you just said, they don't know what you just said? Or if you ask them what they just said, they don't know what they just said either? Their hearing is constricted. Have you ever been in an argument or a discussion with someone where they were attacking you, threatening you, demanding, intimidating, forcing, pushing, trying to control? Or the opposite of that, have you been in situations where people have avoided you out of fear? Or are there times when you avoid addressing something with others out of fear? Or you may be there physically, but you just mentally and emotionally shut down. It's like the eyes glaze over. In all of those situations, you or the other party are probably in preschool enforcer thinking, where your thinking is episodic. You're operating out of a series of unrelated episodes, and you don't understand the relationship between the events taking place. You don't see the whole picture. You don't understand cause and effect relationships. And in these situations, you really don't have relationships. Rather, you're existing in a world of objects. Think about the fact that a very young child does not know that human beings have internal reality. They don't know that people have thoughts, feelings, and needs. You know, a 1 or 2 year old child essentially does not know that there's any difference between his or her mother and the family dog in terms of what's going on inside of them. They only see the external behavior. They only see the external shell. They don't understand intentionality behind behavior. So at this stage, I really don't understand what other people need. I don't have insight into others, and I don't understand the impact that I have on others. What is very important about that is that if I'm dealing with somebody else, especially an adult who's in this level of thinking, and they're being aggressive or threatening towards me, and if I decide to turn the other cheek, hoping that they will recognize the impact that they are having on me and stop, I need to know that I'm probably putting myself in a very dangerous situation. That if they see me becoming passive, they will not, they cannot, they do not have the ability to recognize the impact they're having on me. And instead, they will probably become more aggressive. So relationships as we know them as adults really don't exist at this stage. Or a variation it takes sometimes for us as adults when we're in this level of thinking is that it feels like we can't live without someone, that we have to have someone for our survival. Power at this stage, because we don't understand intentionality, we don't understand the internal workings in people, power has to do with external visible symbols. If you're physically bigger than I am, then I assume you have more power than I do. I assume you know more than I do. I always assumed my older brother knew more than I did, and of course I let him lead me down a lot of blind alleys from my perspective. Power can be rest in the fact that it's a man instead of a woman, or that the person has gray hair, or they have a three-piece suit, or they have some kind of a uniform or religious garb, or their office is bigger, or their car is bigger, or they have more tanks and planes. But it has to do with quantitative external symbols, not internal intentionality. And my need at this stage is for survival. I need to survive biologically and emotionally. And my motivation is to do whatever I can do to avoid getting hurt, or to avoid getting caught, to avoid being beaten, to avoid dying. At this stage, again, my motivation in any stage has to do with what my capability is for moral thinking. And my capability for moral thinking changes with each level of thinking. At this stage, because I do not understand intentionality, my level of moral thinking is what we'd really call amoral, or I am unable to think about either what I do or the impact or consequences of what I do on others. I am only focused on my own survival. So as long as I survive, as long as I don't get caught, as long as I don't get hurt, then it's morally okay to do. It doesn't matter what the consequences are for other people. And unfortunately, we see this kind of behavior all too frequently going on among adults. It's not just a preschool behavior. So as you think about these characteristics, as you think about being a prisoner of the present moment in my episodic thinking, not having a time perspective, you think about being a prisoner of your own body, of not really having insight or empathy into others, but being totally focused on your own needs, such as an infant who is hungry, the whole world is hunger. Or times when you and I are angry, nothing exists but our anger. If you think about believing that other people who are bigger have more power, or who have more objects have more power. When you think about times that you need, feel a need to simply survive, emotionally or biologically. When you think about times that you drive the speed limit simply to avoid getting caught. And all those times, you and the other person are likely in preschool enforcer thinking. So what are some of the feelings and behaviors that go with this? Well, one of the ways I know I'm here is when I feel overwhelmed, or when I'm really scared or frightened, or feel strong anxiety, or maybe even terror, or when my anger takes the form of rage, where I want to attack someone, I want to beat them, I may want to hit them physically. The behaviors take the form of aggression, of attacking, forcing, threatening, demanding, intimidating, or the opposite of that when I get scared, of going away out of fear, becoming silent, the words get caught in my throat, I feel choked, or my breathing gets tight, or I feel paralyzed like I can't move, or I believe and feel like I don't have any options, that there's nothing I can do, I feel hopeless, or lost, or stuck, or homeless, or things don't make sense. I'm genuinely confused. I don't understand. Things don't make sense to me. Those are all preschool enforcer experiences. In the next tape, we'll talk about the first principle and what we can do to help ourselves and others when we find ourselves in this level of thinking, to grow up in the moment and to grow up over time. And now, if you'd like to turn to worksheet number 8 in your handbook, there is another application exercise that you can do to help integrate, be more aware of this level of thinking in yourself and others. Sheet is entitled Enforcer Worksheet, and it invites you to list examples of when you observe yourself and others in this level of thinking, and what are the behaviors or statements that you observe yourself and others doing and saying in each of these examples. What are the beliefs that you have? What are the emotions that you experience? And what kind of results that you get? I strongly encourage you to let yourself be aware of when you are in this level of thinking, because each of us is at different times when we become tired or stressed or threatened. It's important to know what situations and what people have the power of triggering you into this level of thinking, because when you are here, you are least effective. You have the fewest options in the world. So there's a temptation to only want to see ourselves in upper levels of thinking, but that's doing a disservice to ourselves. Let yourself be able to not only recognize this level of thinking of others in others when they're attacking or demanding or running away out of fear, but let yourself also know this in yourself. Give yourself the gift of this.
This is the end of tape 3.